Hour number two of the program. Appreciate everybody that checked in the first hour. Got full lines to get to, so we'll continue this Falcons conversation here. We'll also hear from Raheem Morris in this hour, as well as talk some college football. Can UGA win it all? Why not? The way they've been playing lately, I'm in. How are you guys feeling about the Dogs? 404-726-0929. Is it time to look at the roster? Have things gotten so bad here in Atlanta that we now need to shift? Like, the coaching staff is the given, right? We all, I don't think I've taken a call here on the station. That's not true. I've taken a few that have said support and supportive things for Raheem Morris. But at the same time, 97, 98% of y'all, I think, are all on the same page about what we feel like needs to happen for the coaching staff for next season to get this thing turned around. But do we need to also look at who's on this team? Most of y'all so far have said no, that the roster's good, it's just being mismanaged. But I just can't help, after the last couple of games, the way that things have gotten so bad at 4-9, I just feel like every part of this team needs some scrutiny. I don't think it needs as much scrutiny as the coaching staff, not even close, but do y'all still have confidence that the right nucleus of this team is in place? Let's see what you're thinking. DeVaris is up first. Go ahead.
What's good, Turtle? This is DeVaris. I believe we spoke, you know, a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you remember, but how you doing?
Yeah, what's up, man? What do you got?
So I'm very disappointed here. I really feel like the Saints game was losable. I didn't like how we approached that game. So I'm feeling like the rematch, I feel like we're going to split the series this year. I feel like the Saints played a good game last week, so I'm a little nervous about that. Like you said earlier, I feel like it's the coaching also with the roster. I feel like it's a compilation of both. I honestly feel like we don't have a culture like as strong a brotherhood as we used to when Dan Quinn was the coach and Mike Smith was the coach. I feel like we're not really solidify a group together. I don't feel like the offense and the defense wants to fight for each other. I feel like everybody is really out there for themselves right now. I feel like we're wasting Bijan's prime. Everyone thinks we should trade Bijan, but I highly disagree with that. That's like the best player we've got since I feel like Julio.
Well, it just depends on how, DeVaris, it just depends on how far you think this team is away, right? Like, if you think they could bring it back around next season, then of course you wouldn't trade Bijan. But if you think they're 2 or 3 years away and you have to give Bijan a fat contract, do you want to do that when your team's not going to win?
If we're not going to win, I'm okay with trading Bijan if it's star for star. It got to be equal. I don't want draft picks and hoping someone out the draft is going to be as good as him. I'm going to need him to go somewhere, and we need to get back the same amount of talent. That's the only way I can let him go and rebuild.
Yeah.
Other than that, I feel like we could point the finger at a lot of the coaching staff. I feel like Raheem, he doesn't show a lot of emotion. All the other coaches we've had, even Arthur Smith, he might have not called the best plays, but he showed emotion. We go to the sidelines, it feels like Raheem is kind of like in a daze. Like, I feel like he's a little bit disappointed at himself and at the team. But I feel like the team doesn't need anybody who's throwing pity parties all the time. They need somebody who's going to be just as frustrated as them or just as hype as them or just as excited as them. I feel like it's not really a good energy in the locker room, especially after they fired the wide receiver coach. I feel like it's just going all downhill right now. And to bring up Shadur again, I don't know. I ain't seen Penix play as good as Shadur did the last game.
Right, but what now? Why would they let, right? He had 4 touchdowns. Why would they let him go? Like, I appreciate it, okay. DeVar. No, DeVaris, I appreciate it, but like, why in the world would the Browns want to put Shadur Sanders on the trade block right now? They may have something. Like, I don't think they. I just don't think they would. 404-726-0929. Although he would be fun here in Atlanta. Lonnie's up next. Lonnie.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm to the point where You can point the finger at everybody. I'm tired of pointing fingers. You know, Raheem, you know, he makes no adjustments throughout the game. It seems like we come in with one plan, and he sticks to the plan, and it's a loss every time. Arbor, you know, the defensive coordinator, I got to, you know, tilt my hat to him. He ain't, you know, had the, you know, the best thing going, but the defense have played they step into the games. They've been on the field too long. When you're on the field 95% of the game, of course you're going to give up some points and touchdowns. I mean, you're out there all the time. I looked at the stats for the Falcons, and David Seal has more touchdowns than Kyle Pitts. I mean, come on. This man is getting paid all this money to do nothing.
Well, he's had two big back-to-back games. He just, and I appreciate the phone call, he just hasn't found the end zone. He's been your leading receiver the last couple of weeks by a significant margin, as a matter of fact. But, yeah, to your point, he's paid to catch touchdowns. He was a number four overall draft pick. If you want to get paid this offseason, you got to act like it. So I agree with you on that. 404-726-0929. Sweet is up next. What's up, Sweet?
Hey, Chris. How are you?
What's up, man?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to compliment Fred on that first call you had tonight. I thought it was excellent. As far as the overall problem, which you're discussing, I think we've got to also think about what's going to happen in the future. You've got the Arthur Blank, the Rich McKay problem, Terry Fontenot, and I think that has to be considered as part of what this problem will be coming forth. But the other thing is also, I noticed you never mentioned Tyler Allgeier at the beginning of your show. And I think he's a key player, but you never mentioned him. And are you concerned because he's up for free agency? Was that one reason?
Yes, we'd appreciate you checking in as always. I don't think he's going to be back because I think he's going to get paid more somewhere else. So I don't really count him as part of the nucleus for the future. Same thing with Pitts. I don't think he's going to be here next year. Is there a chance they bring him back? Sure. But I think they have bigger needs elsewhere. They have other players that they're going to need to account for. David Onyemata is a free agent. Do you want him back? You have Caden Ellis as a free agent. Do you want him back? You have, I'm looking at the list right here. I wouldn't bring back Leonard Floyd. I don't think he's done enough. But definitely Caden Ellis, David Onyemata. Arnold Ebikadi, do you want him back? D. Alford's had a great year. D'Angelo Malone stepped up on special teams. Josh Woods. There's other guys that you're going to need to pay. And if you want to make significant adjustments elsewhere, then you're going to need to sacrifice in certain areas. And your second running back, I think, probably is lower on the totem pole than some of those other positions. Yo is up next. What up, yo?
What's happening, Turtle? So I'm going to start this by saying some real simple stuff. Kyle Pitts is a leading receiver on this team as of now because Drake London is out. Like, we can all agree that is a fact. That is not, like, up for debate, right? Kyle has more catches than everybody else on this team, including Drake London at this point because Drake London is out.
Yep.
I'm tired of that debate, right? Kyle Pitts has, like, 45 more catches than Darnell Mooney. Darnell makes $13 million and Kyle Pitts makes $10. The franchise tag for Kyle is about $15 million, but you can probably get him negotiated down to where kind of Mooney is at, because that's what Andrews just got over with the Ravens. Regardless of that, let me just start here. I will always talk about the trenches when it comes to football. Because I am a guy who right now at 52 years old is 5'8" and about 250 pounds. When I was actually playing football at 18, I was 5'8" and 220 pounds. That makes me bigger than every single wide receiver that we got outside of Drake London. You cannot have a run game where you're depending on your wide receivers to block when they're not bigger than the DB that they have to block. That's a problem. We talk about what we have to do when it comes to the rest of the roster and why we couldn't pay Drew Dalton. It's because we have a lot of money tied up into guys who are aging and guys who are underperforming. I'm going to land it here, Turtle. the Philadelphia Eagles made a weird decision in the offseason. They got rid of the 6'7", 350-pound Mekhi Becton that allowed them to have Saquon run for what would have been the NFL record if he decided to go ahead and play against the Giants and embarrass them. And they went with another guy because they didn't want to pay him $10 million. We are in a problem where our guys who defend the lines of scrimmage are not big enough, and we're not willing to pay them. We're like the worst in the league on third down conversions because we don't have guys who can block for a quarterback sneak. There is a problem in the front side of our offensive line and the front side of our defensive line not being big enough, but our most money is being spent on guys who are 6'3", 300 pounds, and guess what? That's not the same as 6'7", 350. So you can draft those guys, and you have to draft those guys. So I would tell Atlanta, look, we don't play bully ball, even though we have the best running back in the NFL, and that is a problem. Love you, Turtle.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it. You know, I can't keep Pitts, man. You're telling me he's right. Oh, you're telling me that Mr. Yo is saying Kyle Pitts is on the same contract plane as Mark Andrews?
Catch
Mark Andrews, the Ravens' all-time leading pass catcher?
Make a contested catch.
No, I can't do it, man.
Make a catch, Kyle Pitts, where there's a cornerback right on you. Make not one where they, you know, you just sitting. Make a contested catch. Even Raheem this past Sunday was talking about how Kyle had plays where he had to have it, and he did not get it. Make a contested catch, Kyle Pitts.
Couple of guys that'll be out there. David Njoku. I'd be interested in him. Zach Ertz would have been out there. Feel bad for him, but he's hurt now. Adam Trautman. Dallas Goedert from the Eagles, he'll be expensive, but he'll be out there. Those guys are worth $13 million a year. Kyle Pitts is not worth $13 million a year. I'm sorry, he's just not. 404-726-0929. When we get back, you will hear from the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Raheem Morris. Great job on the phones. We'll continue to take more of your calls later on in the show as well. Man, we are in quite a situation here, Falcons fans, and we'll continue to talk about it with you at 404-726-0929. Appreciate everybody who checked in tonight. We'll take more of your calls later in the show. 404-726-0929 is Chris Thomas Turtle hanging out with you for the full four tonight. We'll be with you until 10 o'clock. We'll talk some college ball coming up in about 10 minutes. Haven't gotten a chance to dive into all the matchups and all the craziness going on. UGA obviously earning their rightful spot. The great game between Ohio State and Indiana, and then all of the moaning and complaining about Notre Dame and Miami and Alabama, and we'll get into all that with our good buddy Ian Valentino coming up. But right now, I wanted you to hear from the head coach himself. Raheem Morris sat down with Mike Bell and Mike Johnson today, filling in for Carl, and this was their conversation exclusively on 92.9 The Game from Flowery Branch.
Mike Johnson,
hey man,
from the Morning Shift jumps in. Former Falcon, you hear him with Squid and with Allie, and we jump right in with Coach Raheem Morris live from the Ticketmaster Studios. How you doing, brother? How you holding up, man?
You know, it's not about holding up in this game. It's about, you know, finding a way to make everybody around you in a better place. And, like, I got a really great team. They got a really great attitude. When you got guys like Bajan, you got guys like Drake, you got guys in this building, the Chris Lindstroms, the Jake Matthews, you know, they know what they want to be. And we got to find a way to get there, and that's what we'll do soon.
Coach, I played, obviously, for a number of different coaches in my time. Mike Smith had a different way of dealing with things after a loss like this. Nick Saban had a different way of dealing with things after a loss like this. What would you say that your coaching style is coming off a loss like we saw this past weekend?
You know, those things that you have, when you have those kind of bad losses, you got to go look at the tape. You got to go evaluate it, and you got to see what went wrong in the plan. And it was really clear, you know, when you come out from the second half, you're in the type of ball game you want to be with a 6-6 game, and that thing turns to a kick return, and then you're going on the ensuing drive, and you fumble in the red zone. That thing turns to a 14-point game pretty quickly. And as you know from playing in the league, that's not our style of play right now. And that wasn't favorable for what we wanted to do. So the thing went awry. And you got to make sure you don't let that happen moving forward. And those are good learning lessons from us, right? Like, everybody's got to be accountable to those moments. And you can't blink when something bad happens. You got to find a way to get out of it.
I know you already spoke with the media coach about, you know, special teams, and you said it. I mean, you had a blocked field goal. You had that kick return. From where I was sitting, and I know you kind of talked about, look, we got to have our heads right for Tampa Bay. Sometimes it's just human nature. You feel like shoulders drop a little bit, and some of the team goes, here we go again.
I'll tell you this, you know, like that was one of the moments that happened. You know, I can definitely say that, you know, when the kickoff return happened after the team is fighting so hard, and then they go out. I love how the offense responded, getting the ball, going back down there. The fumble happens in the red zone, deep in their territory, where you can go make that thing, you can nullify it. But when they get the ball back, go down and score, they get the 14-point lead, you do feel a little bit of a lull. Now, the guys picked it back up. They still fight and all of those things. But, like, you can't have that. And this league's too good for that to happen, particularly against a really good football team like we played this week.
I'm curious what did happen on the field goal, because I was watching it, and I'm hearing echoes of Keith Armstrong in my ear going, hey, you can get run over. Just get run over at 1.3
seconds. Get run over slow. That's exactly slow. Right.
I was curious because I'm watching it. The operation, was it slow? You know, Bergeron's out there playing the wing. Are we tight in the splits? Because it can be in any number of things. It seems so simple to, I think, people watching it, but there's so many minute details that go into that situation.
The operation was clean. We got to do a better job on the edge. We got to go, like you just said, you got to get run over slow. You got to be bigger. You got to do the things you need to do right there in order to happen. Keith Armstrong, who I was here with, lucky enough and fortunate to be with, I can hear all those same coaching points. You know, and to be honest, that the first one that we got off, he was really close to that one as well.
He was, yep.
And that should have been a correctable moment where you can go back and teach that thing and get it done the right way on the sideline and get a little bigger right there. But we were not able to do it. So when he got that block, you know, all of those things you watch guys fight back from, but got a little overwhelming for the guys at that point, especially on that second fumble.
Coach Raheem Morris with us, guys, inside the Ticketmaster Studios, jumping right in today on Dukes and Bell. You know, special teams, it's all about attitude, and guys make careers on special teams.
It's not.
Guys, they get their pensions for sticking around in the NFL through special teams in some cases. Where's the pride? I mean, where is the pride in that unit?
You know, I won't say it's the pride thing with the guys. I mean, it's a lack of execution for sure. There's some things that's not getting done that you got to get done. You know, obviously you got to go out and you got to figure out how to get people on the ground at all times. People do make careers out of it. You know, we know Eric Weems. He's one of the guys that takes the pride in everything. Like, these guys have pride. You got Mike Ford out here who's, you know, potentially up for, you know, a Pro Bowl ballot, you know, and how he's playing. So it's not a pride thing. It is an accountability to everybody doing the jobs at all hands, all deck. Yeah. And no matter who's in there, right? You can't make excuses about backups. You can't make excuses about injuries. No matter who goes in there, you got to get the job done. That's the importance of knowing what your job is and how to do it, how important every job is.
Where do you turn? I mean, because otherwise, if it's not practice squad, I know you don't want to be forced to use starters on teams. Is that what it comes to?
You know, I don't believe in that. I think you got to go find ways to win no matter what. So whoever can go out there and help you get it done, we'll do that. You know, you got a chance to see Watt out there, young Xavier Watt out there, go and play. We've seen Jalen Walker go and cover kicks. You know, all these guys are starters. All these guys do what they got to do. And you got to get the guys out there that can make the plays. And, like, and if it comes from practice squad, with people getting opportunities, that's where it comes from. I mean, I'm sure you got a better example than that than me. But, like, I've seen people walk on from practice squad and really make significant improvements and significant advancements in their career and go out there and make it happen.
Anton Smith was one of the best.
No
he
doubt.
Was a gunner. Golly, man, I used to love watching him go to work.
I did not. I was in Tampa.
I know that. No, that's right. He was unbelievable to watch do that. I'm curious from your standpoint, what did happen with the defense in the second half? And you mentioned it, things get off the rails. They make adjustments. I'm watching the first drive. I go out there. AJ makes, you know, he's got good, you know, posture on the first play of the game, forced the guy out of bounds. D. Alford steps up, makes a tackle right there at line of scrimmage. You know, James Pierce gets the sack. Jalen Walker's in phase and like a spy technique. I mean, it's beautiful. The first drive is beautiful. The first half, right. I mean, as the game wore on, though, obviously they were able to have more success. What do you think changed for them offensively in the second half?
When they got the 14-point lead, they put you in kind of harm's way. You know, you're basically playing four-minute ball. And you're basically putting yourself in harm's way, having to load the box up, thinking you're stopping a run. And that opened up explosive plays by Cooper Kupp and Smith and Jigba, to be honest with you. You know, you can't make excuses for that. You still got to go make those plays. But we definitely had to put ourselves in most acceptable ways in order to try to get back in that game. They didn't let us. They hit the explosive plays. We didn't stop those guys from hitting those explosive plays. And then that's how it got out of whack.
Yeah.
But you got to keep that game in arm's reach.
Right.
In order to win games versus good football teams, as you know.
Yeah.
the third downs continue to be just a nightmare. For one out of 13 for Kirk. The good news is you're getting Pitts more involved the last couple of weeks, just not translating in the red zone and scoring. And then Mooney's play is almost indicative of the whole damn season.
The red zone last week was kind of like the outlier, you know. Right. From the red zone from the weeks prior to that, we had been really rolling, really pride ourselves on running the ball in the end zone, and watching Tyler and Bijan do that over the last 5 to 6 weeks have been outstanding. You know, where the problems lie is in third down, and we gotta have plays made by our wideouts. You know, Bijan made the first third down, the third and two, made a nice move on the edge, got the ball in his hand, really got us going. The next third down, we end up getting a PI, getting moved down in there. Those things don't count as a conversion, but it happened. The next one, we get a real opportunity on a zero blitz. We get a 70 protection, as you know. We slide to that thing. Didn't get a great slide, but still got the ball up with an opportunity to cow. Well, you got to make that play. And if you make those plays like he made later on a play similar to it, that's how you move the ball on third down.
Is the Mooney play just kind of like an example of the detail and not being detail oriented?
I don't think it's detail with Mooney. More so with Mooney, it is the fight of coming back off of how important it is to have your offseason, how important it is to have your training camp, how important it is for you to get going the right way so you can maintain throughout the whole process. And we've been off a little bit there all year, so fair enough criticism. I definitely agree with that. But we got to find a way to get him back, and we got him back just for a glimpse of what he can be and what he is versus New Orleans, and it's got to be more consistent for us.
Coach, I'm curious to get your take on what you do think this offense is missing. I've been screaming from the mountaintops for more screens, and you guys have definitely tried to do that. Zach's done a nice job. Get a couple batted down at the line of scrimmage. The holding call on David Sills, which is really ticky-tack on the Algier screen.
God, I love your honesty. Can we get this guy every week? Because you can say that. Yes. I cannot.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's tough, man. Come on.
It was brutal. It's tough. It was brutal. And, you know, I think I look at it and I'm like, man, because you're right. Between the 20s, it seems like the offense is cooking and you start getting near the red zone and things start happening. What do you think this offense is missing? What would you like to see more of from this group?
I'll talk about this week in particular because we had got things going in the red zone, like I just mentioned. This week, the penalties killed us in the red zone. We had a holding penalty on our young DT. We had another holding penalty, not young D tackle, young
Devin
DT.
Thomas.
Yes.
Yep.
We had a holding penalty on DT. We got another holding penalty you just mentioned on the screen game that kind of really set us back. And when those moments happen, we had to settle for field goals, and those are the things that kill you in the red zone. When you have negative plays or you have penalties, those are things that kill you in the red zone. Those are the things that we had not been doing. So we're able to score some touchdowns, being able to run the football in, being efficient, being effective, staying on track, which we have to be, right? We got to get better wideout play, right? Missing Drake right now hurts, and we haven't played particularly well on wideout, so that's how you struggle in third down world. So, like, right. When that happens, you got to get guys to make plays, and one of our guys is Cal Pitts.
I guess could you use Bijan even more to help out with make
that
up, make
is
up
a
Drake?
Tough ass.
I know he's doing everything. And the fumble,
man's got 1,000-yard rushing. He's got 500 yards receiving.
And the fumble was so uncharacteristic. So you can't yell at Bijan. He's the heart and soul of his team.
you can, and Bijan, you don't have to. Is the difference? You know, like there's nobody going to be more accountable than Bijan. And like I felt probably like all of us felt bad for Bijan. Like, you know, that's one of the people you check on after the game, make sure he's okay. But he's got such a strong faith, such a strong religion, such strong belief in himself that, like, he's going to bounce back. And, like, I can't wait.
I think the same things when you say that. How much more can you use him? Because I think there's a point where you guys are 3-2 and we go empty backfield and you throw the slant to him to pick up the first down. Right, right. And I'm going, no, don't go empty. Okay, yeah, throw it to Bijan. Yeah, that's a good idea. Good idea, Zach. I love that play. And I don't know how you can get him more involved already than he is. I thought, you know, some of the designs were him were really, really nice this past week. You guys have played Seattle a couple years in a row at our place. It's been decisive victories for them in both of those. What do you think Seattle's gotten right over the last couple years with that team and the things they've been able to do?
You know, I think their GM has done a really nice job of doing what we're trying to do, you know, build it up front. And right now, going out the last couple of years, being able to get Rook and Dulles in last year's draft, building our front on defensive line. This year, going to get Jalen Walker and James Pierce, really building the front line. When you look at that front line over there, I mean, they've got backups as first rounders, you know, and like it's what you need on both sides of the ball. And then they went out this year and really did a nice job of really, you know, parting ways with DK, but bringing in a guy like Cooper Kupp and really being able to make Smith and Jigba his number one.
Yeah.
And then on offense, once you get that rolling, they got two backs in the backfield, which we are very proud of what we've done, but they built that thing the right way. They've gone out. They got their quarterback in Sam Darnold. He's really been able to be efficient, really be able to get the ball down the field. You know, he's had his games where he's been questioned, which is always going to happen at quarterback.
Sure.
It's just the nature of the beast. But I think they've done a nice job of really building the football team and then going out there being able to execute. And this year is really showing up in a major way.
Yeah. It's head coach Raheem Morris, guys, live inside Ticketmaster Studios on Duke Zubel with Mike Johnson. Tampa Bay, you're getting him after.
Why does Mike Johnson get like this cool?
Well, it's kind of like Divine Diablo.
No. You know? I mean, that's Mike what I'm Johnson. Saying. Like, you it's can't just say that.
We're gonna call it Mike and Mike in the afternoon. Like, that's what we're gonna go with.
Been used.
Yeah. Well, they were mornings technically, but
exactly. Yeah, there you go.
But no, man, this Tampa Bay team. You know, if Koo doesn't miss the field goal, we maybe go to overtime. Maybe if we're talking, it sets the tone. I don't know how things would have gone if we pulled that game out, but it's a division rival, and they've been dealing with injuries, but now they get some of their guys back.
That game was one of those games like where you felt like your team was where you were supposed to be. I remember you guys remember the third play of the season. We throw a check down to Bijan, and he shows Boom. What he is right away, right? And then at the end of that game, I don't know if you remember, but our quarterback, Michael Penix, went to check Superman and started scrambling around, dove for a few touchdowns, ran into another one. Got us close in the other ones, made some really good throws in that game, especially versus their zero coverage. They came out in the base package, really did a nice job of settling us down in the run, us running 11 personnel. Did a nice job there, right? We did a nice job on defense coming out, really established the fact that we can rush the pass this year. It was a great game. And then we missed a kick at the end of the game. And those things are all hurt. Right? And they all those things happen. But you never know what happens, like you're talking about, if you can find a way to win that game, one game, you know, and like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So no spilled milk.
Coach, it's another Thursday night game against Tampa. You go back a year ago, a little over a year ago, to the Thursday night game where Kirk throws for over 500 yards. You go looking back at the stats last year in that game, it's a lot of the same people, and obviously Drake was a part of that game and, you know, had 150 yards receiving, but Darnell's the same way, I believe, 8 or 9 catches. What's the biggest difference in this offense last year as opposed to this year at this point in the season?
You know, it's hard to say, but it's not the timing. You know, like we're probably not built to throw for 500 yards right now. We weren't built to throw for it that night. That was what was needed to win the football game that day, right? We had the guard and throw. They were able to stop our run. We found easy completions. We were able to gash a couple of their blitzes and some zone pressures. Things felt really good, felt smooth, moved dramatically, got into the red zone and scored touchdowns. Played well enough on defense to win it at the end and got a big time going to overtime and executed at a very high level to slap it with the timeout. I know you guys remember spiking that thing. I don't know what happened on the penalty after that, but we got the long field goal. Things happen the right way. And when you got that kind of momentum and people make plays and you find out ways to finish, I think that's the biggest difference in what's happening right now.
When you have the weekly meetings with Arthur Blank and he's asking you about, you know, what happened, is just what do you say? It's like, it's just simply, it's a matter of execution.
No, Mike.
We dialed up the right stuff and the players didn't do their jobs? Or where do you draw the line on that?
You absolutely don't do that.
I mean, you just say to us, look, Mike, it's on me. I didn't have them prepared.
The truth is bulletproof, Mike. And that is your statement, right? So, when you go into this game, right, every time we go play a game, there's a what it takes to win a game, Mike, right? I know you haven't played a sport in a long time. Look like it. But
hold on. Now you don't have to take shots.
That wasn't a shot, Mike.
I mean, look, everybody competed at some level out there.
We're old, Mike. That's all we're saying.
All right, man.
We haven't done it.
But I'm saying, what do you say when Arthur's – you got to find a way,
right, to win a game, right? You give them the what it takes before the game.
Right.
And then you go explain what happens after the game, right? If you're able to do those things. Like last week, we had to limit explosions on defense. And in the second half, we did not. And exactly how you talked about it. You had to go find a way to get the ball back off of Sam Darnold to be able to win. That's how you've won football games, right? That's how they've been beaten. We did it in the first half, and after that, it was kind of downhill. Wasn't able to continue to get those things done. And no different in an offense. You had to come out and run the football, stay on track. We stayed on track the first half. We missed a couple field goals, but the score was 6-6. It could have very easily been 14-6 if you just do better things, a little bit better version. And then on special teams, you had to go out and cover.
Right.
And it really hurt us. So, like, when you're talking about these things, these are in real time. These moments that he knows he's in the box looking for, so we don't see those things happen. It's not having to make the excuse. It's telling them the truth on what happened on the play and why those things didn't get accomplished or got accomplished.
Right.
And those are the things about the media. You never want to go in there and, like, make up stuff, you know, like
you got to
tell them before the game.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Coach, real quick before I let you go, I did notice, and I mentioned it, you know, the first series, Jalen Walker backs off the ball. I think you're looking for Sam Darnold to pick up some first downs with his legs last week. Baker Mayfield has done that a ton of times against us. How much of that translates what the game plan was a week ago to kind of what Tampa's able to
first,
do in the quarterback spot?
First game of the season, you know, Baker's definitely a problem that way. And a lot of the quarterbacks right now in the National Football League, just in general, but like you just mentioned, having somebody always paying attention to him. Like the first game of the year, I know you remember the big time tackle on third down, and I think 9, Caden Ellis made in the middle of the field. I think it was on the first third down of the season. And then he was able to hurt us later by breaking a few tackles and get out the box, and how you control the rush lanes and how you want to organize your rush to make sure when you do have a four-man rush, we're not looking at them, that these guys are organized up front so he can't get out. And then if you do allow those guys to be free and free rushers and get up the field and do some of the different things, you better have a guy looking at him. And when you're looking at Baker, he's better be a guy that can actually tackle him, right? Baker's right. Not a guy that's going to go out there and be an easy tackle. We know that. He knows that. One of the toughest guys I've been around in football, being out there in L.A. with him. And he looks for those moments to shine. And he's done it, you know, this year at a very high level for the most part.
Last year, one of the coolest plays, that touchdown to Mooney down in Tampa. Hopefully we'll see some of that on Thursday night.
Oh, man, the double post that we kind of threw up to him, and he went up and made a great grab.
That was the prettiest throw of the year last year.
The prettiest throw of the year last year.
Dropped it right in the bucket. I talked about it with Arch at the time. It was kind of nice.
It was a good throw. The throw up the sideline versus Tampa 2 versus the Carolina Panthers, Michael Penix made the red.
Dropped it
was a pretty
bucket.
Good one, too. Yeah. But it was some good ones. I'll give you that one.
Good luck.
Good stuff there from Coach. Him and Mike Bell certainly have developed a playful back and forth. We'll call it there. Glad to bring you that interview exclusively here on 92.9 The Game. When we get back, let's talk some college ball, shall we? Georgia is in. Bama is in. Notre Dame is out. Ian Valentino, A to Z Sports. More of your calls as well, 404-726-0929. Talking Falcons ball with you on a Tuesday. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle with you. Coming up in 10 minutes from now, there is a rumor going on around the NBA world that the Hawks could be involved in a trade for a superstar in the NBA. I wouldn't touch this one with a 10-foot pole. We'll talk to Caleb Johnson about it coming up next on Chris Thomas Tonight. But right now, we got to sprinkle in some college football. Have been all NFL and Falcons tonight, so let's change that promptly with our buddy Ian Valentino of A to Z Sports. Ian, let's start with what happened last weekend. What did you make of the decision to keep Notre Dame out, let Miami and Alabama in?
You know, I'm a little bit surprised that Alabama made it. I get the sense they didn't want to punish teams for making the conference championship, and I think that's a fine argument. But the Miami discussion, I think, is a lot easier. You're looking at head-to-head matchups, and I think the metrics, you know, kind of point toward a pretty even battle there. You look at Notre Dame, the strength of schedule, I think, was a concern for folks, and they lost the games that probably mattered the most to them. Earlier in the season, and you know, they don't get the benefit of being in a conference. So I do like some of the line of the sand saying, look, you can't have your cake and eat it too and expect to get all of the breaks. But I do think if you looked at from where their team is today and where the team of Alabama is today, I think you'd make the argument, or at least I would, that Notre Dame's probably a better team right now. I think Alabama's kind of been dead in the water for the last couple of weeks. They've looked like a much worse team. So it's really difficult with the eye test, but it's a bigger picture discussion where you're talking about, like, a team got blown out in the SEC title game to a title contender. So does that make Alabama a title contender? Can they be a title contender truly if they lost to one of the best teams in the country? I don't know. It's very unique, but I think they came down and, you know, maybe the argument should be more so Notre Dame versus James Madison, or Notre Dame versus towards like the end of the bottom 12 there versus against like Miami or Alabama. It's just easier to kind of point out the other two bigger teams. That might be a little bit more of a difficult decision, but I don't mind the decision. I don't think that Notre Dame took care of business when they needed to.
Do you think their AD Pete Bavakwa stepped out of bounds when he went on Dan Patrick's show and said what he said?
No, I get it. I do. I understand. I'd probably do the same thing if I was him. And they're all fighting for a really competitive piece of the pie. And Notre Dame's, you know, they've put their own, you know, hard foot down over the years over where they stand and how they want to be treated. And look, that's fine if you want to put that down, but sometimes there's going to be, you know, repercussions where maybe others don't agree with that. And I think that might have been what happened here, where it's not necessarily trying to be punitive, but you just, like I said, you don't get the benefit of the doubt.
All right, so when it comes to what we did see on the field, I think there's no reason everyone in our backyard here in Atlanta and down to Athens shouldn't be feeling like Georgia is playing as well as any team in the country right now.
Yeah, they definitely look like a true title contender. They are peaking at the right time. The offense looks so much better. It looks much more balanced. I think they're ability to spread the ball around and be able to find offense where they need to is great. They're complementing a defense that's playing as well as anyone. The special teams obviously coming up with a huge play. That's what they need. That's the recipe for this team. This will not be a championship team if they're not getting special teams and defensive turnovers and maybe even touchdowns or at least, you know, big plays. So that if they're going to play like that over the next couple of weeks, that's going to be a team that absolutely has just as good of a chance as Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon.
Who would you give the edge in the Heisman to right now? It's pretty tough.
Yeah, I think it's Mendoza's. I think Mendoza won it against Ohio State. It's not just as simple as quarterback versus quarterback, but every chance that Mendoza had the chance to make a play, he did it. And his stat line against Ohio State maybe wasn't amazing, but look at the quality of the throws. He made every high leverage throw asked of him, comes back on that first play, gets hit really hard, pops back up, and just delivers a really great performance. They don't win that game if he doesn't play exactly like he does. And Jeremiah Love, yeah, I think he'd be another worthy candidate too. And you know, you could probably squeeze in a little bit there. Diego Pavia is a little bit tougher for him just because his team didn't make the playoff, and that's not his fault. But I think Sayan probably lost it. I think Sayan was probably my favorite entering that game, but he just looked like a deer in the headlines. So it's hard to boil it down to one game like that. It's not truly how you want it to be. But in a year where there's not a superstar that just took it and ran with it early on, I think it does kind of come down to what happened in the biggest game of the regular season. And I think we got the answer. Fernando Mendoza was clearly the better player.
Which massive underdog has the best chance to pull it off, in your opinion?
I think it's weird to say they're an underdog. I think Texas Tech, I don't think anyone really takes them seriously, which is strange for a team that ranks in the top four and has a bye week. It's really, you know, and I get it. Their strength of schedule is, you know, awful. And they didn't play anybody that really had a chance besides BYU to make it this far. But they have a pretty favorable schedule. I know Oregon is going to be tough on that side of the bracket, and obviously Indiana, but I don't look at Texas Tech like they're woefully undermanned or anything like that. That defense, it really, really plays well as a unit. They have a couple of guys who I think will be big-time players when you're talking about the NFL draft. They're just not being on a high-profile team now. And then the offense, they just continue to roll, and that trenches on both sides of the ball, I think, can compete with almost anyone. I think Georgia and Ohio State would be the concern there, and maybe even Indiana to a smaller degree. But I think Tech is someone they kind of get lost with the middle tier teams of like Oklahoma and Alabama when you talk about these, you know, the odds say one thing, but just I don't see anyone picking them to even last beyond Oregon. And I think that's a mistake. I think there's a pretty decent chance that Texas Tech could come out of their side of the bracket, beat Indiana and beat Oregon.
Talking all things NCAA football with the college football playoff right around the corner with our buddy Ian Valentino. Make sure you check him out at A to Z Sports. Are you surprised without Lane Kiffin that Ole Miss is still a 17.5-point favorite over Tulane?
Yeah, I think it's a little rich. There's a little bit to the mindset of, okay, you promoted a guy from within. They promoted the defensive coordinator to be head coach. Yeah, they're probably going to be a little bit motivated to be a little bit more energized and demonstrative on the field, you know, especially without Lane. Hey, we're going to rally around our coach and, you know, we don't need that guy, blah, blah, blah. But there is a loss of talent there, and that has to be recognized. And I think Ole Miss is a very good team, and Tulane's a good team too. They probably should be a 2-score favorite there, maybe a 10 or 12 point favorite. I think, you know, you're talking about 3 scores, and that seems pretty rich. And that might have been rich even with Lane. So, yeah, I think there might be a little bit of an overvalue there, like an SEC overvalue, and maybe everyone banking on something happened because that motivation X factor. I think Tulane's going to be just as motivated to say, hey, you know, this is an opportunity for us. You're without your head coach, your star head coach. We're going to take advantage while you're focused on that. It'll be a good game. I do think Ole Miss wins fairly comfortably, but I'm not sitting there looking at that line like, oh, yeah, Ole Miss is a good value there. I don't see that at all.
Before I let you go, are you buying the Marcus Freeman to the Giants stuff?
I am. I think he is a prototypical NFL head coach. He, to me, is the guy I would probably be aiming for. I don't think there's a bunch of good coordinator candidates that you'd want to talk to, but there's not a bunch of guys that franchise can go out and say, hey, we upgraded in a slam dunk way I would start with Freeman too. I think everyone started to get on that bandwagon last year. He runs a professional program. It's a lot easier to kind of see that jump from college football to the NFL nowadays. They're much more similar leagues than what they used to be. So I would absolutely talk to him. You want to see what kind of coordinators he's going to bring in. You're going to see how he interacts with athletes, but he is the new age coach. There's not that old grinder mindset of I'm going to wear down my players and, you know, make them upset. Because I'm going to, you know, like the Urban Meyer type of mindset. He has the young guy connection, very energetic. I think he's going to be able to build a good staff. So I think he is, and I would be pretty surprised if they don't end up hiring Freeman. It's going to really come down to Freeman, though. I think it's his decision, just like it was last year.
Ian, great stuff. Appreciate it, as always. We'll chat soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, that is Ian Valentino there, A to Z Sports, talking all things dogs and college football playoff. When we get back, Oren, did you see this rumor about a potential NBA star that could come to Atlanta?
I did.
Oh, boy. I'll tell
you. Shams bomb.
Yeah. And I want that Shams bomb to be going off in Charlotte, not here in Atlanta. We'll talk about that next. Stay tuned. It's Chris Thomas Tonight Turtle with you till 10.